Roland. Hello there, Andy and Zach, back at East Nashville Beer Works, and we were just talking about who is listening and how intently they're listening. Now, I know that you're listening intently to me right now, but Andy is actually disgruntled that his new phone is not listening to him as closely as he would like.
Andy
recently switched over to iPhone from Android.
Well, so I was an iPhone person for a long time, and then I switched over to an Android, and I was with Android for like 4 years, and now I'm most recently switched back to an iPhone. Now, there's a lot of things about the iPhone that I like. Like, I like the platform, I like that I can send videos and photos or whatever, and it's not, like, it's not all weird.
Boy, I like that I can text you and you actually get it.
Well, there's that too, yeah.
And that you can actually text me back.
Well, that's more of a service issue with your apartment, but anyway. So there, all that is to say, the Hey Siri versus the Hey Google, Siri does not understand a single thing I'm saying, ever. Hey Google gets it pretty damn close, comparatively. So there's that. And then the autocorrect on the iPhone is abysmal. It is abysmal compared to Google. So I'm not saying, I'm not going to go back. I'm going to stay with the iPhone because I like the platform overall better. But I'm just noticing after having been back for a couple of weeks that something as simple as autocorrect is trash. It's so bad. It's really bad. It let me send the word sandwiches, sandwiches, earlier and didn't correct it. I was like, and I knew that it was wrong because I had to resend it. And I was like, how do you not correct that?
Well, that's part of the fun.
All right, anyway.
Well, I'm definitely not an Apple apologist, and I'm not an Apple nerd or a super Apple fan or anything.
Even though you have an iPhone and an Apple computer.
Hey, man. If there's a better product, I'm agnostic. Like, take my money. I don't care who you are. What I am a big fan of is seeing those crisp videos on your Instagram.
Well, yes. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I almost for a while thought it was like a conspiracy where like Apple would like fuzzy up Android video just through an Apple product, if that makes sense.
Oh.
Because I always thought, how do Android users accept this subpar video quality?
You know, the irony of that is when...
Like, do you notice?
Yeah, well, so when I first had the Android that I just traded back in, the phone, the camera quality and the video quality was far and away better than my wife's iPhone, like leagues away. It was actually kind of funny because we thought, you know, because the story goes, I had been an iPhone person for a long time, and then I switched over to a Google Pixel just to try to change things up, and then I lost that Google Pixel in the river. And another Android company was like, well, we will buy out your contract if you use our phone for 2 years, which I did, and then used it for an additional year before I finally upgraded. But all that is to say, the camera quality on that Android at the time was... It was like not even like we're not even talking about the same ballpark. We're not even talking about the same ball game. It eclipsed the iPhone that my wife had at the time by like.
So what happened?
You know, I don't know. I thought about this the other day, and I was talking to somebody about it. I don't know for sure, but the camera quality and the picture quality went down. I don't know if the camera quality and picture quality from the iPhone caught up and then surpassed my old phone, or what? Honestly, what feels more likely is that the software was just outdated, or just needed to be upgraded. Or this sounds conspiratorial, but it like almost like they throttled the quality back so that I would upgrade.
Well, I'll say this. Not only am I happy that now I can text you reliably, but now we can also airdrop each other.
All those OnlyFans pics?
All those pieces of content that we've been filming for each other.
We need to be able to airdrop.
We can airdrop.
Yeah.
So we've got that.
That's true.
So, all that to say, I don't care. I'm not exactly in the cult of Apple, but especially when, you know, I'm doing so much content editing and sharing between a laptop and a phone, the airdrop thing does kind of come in handy. But, I mean, there's some obvious things that I'm very frustrated with Apple about a lot of the times. But I think 6 minutes is long enough to
bitch
and moan about our cell phones.
This is not a Best Buy, like, tech
shootout.
Yeah, we're not talking about best tech.
But we both had pretty fun weekends. Uh-huh. Again, you took yourself and your Toyota out into the woods.
I did.
This time with people you actually know.
That's true.
Your family, no less.
Yeah, no, last weekend I was out in my Toyota with some strangers from the internet. And this weekend I went camping with my dad and my brother.
Yeah.
One last kind of outing before shit gets real with a baby.
Yeah, man.
We went to the OBGYN today. And it's getting real. They're like, hey, you know what? If you start having like really painful... So I'm learning. This is how I'm learning. Our baby is due in less than a month. Mm. Oh, also shout out to Jesse Riley and Hillary because she's not given birth yet.
I was going to say,
she's
they're
pushing
getting
41 weeks.
Very close.
Yeah, no,
right?
She's pushing 41 weeks on Wednesday is what he told me.
Is that 9 months?
That's past.
That's past?
Yeah. They'll induce her. If it keeps going closer to 42 weeks, they'll induce her. They're like, nah, that baby is baked.
Oh, man, I meant to call him yesterday.
Yeah. So anyway, so shout out to Jesse Riley and Hillary. Hopefully, there's no real risk. Again, like beyond 41 to closer to 42 weeks, they'll induce her. So there's not really any risk. It's just that's a long time.
How wild is it that you guys are going to have a kid?
Within the same month?
Practically at the same time.
I think it's kind of cool, actually. I didn't tell him that because he was like, we're due September 28th. And I was like, oh, we're due October 28th. And I was like, man, it's only a month. And now, hopefully, fingers crossed, we're all due in the same month.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
All that is to say, what I'm learning is... There's a condition called Braxton Hicks where it's like almost like these false contractions. So my wife gets like these.
Did you say Braxton Hicks?
Braxton Hicks.
That sounds like a stereotypical Nashville baby name.
Somebody's last
Braxton.
Name is Hicks.
Braxton
name
Hicks.
Their son Braxton. Anyway, so we went. All that is to say, we saw the OB today, and she said, "Good Lord."
What in the deuce?
Yeah. Right. What's happening? Why are we throwing metal? All right. So Braxton Hicks, whatever. What was I saying? Something about
a condition, a
it's
situation.
It's almost like these false contractions. Anyway, the OB said that if she has like extreme pain for a minute or longer, to go to the hospital, and if her water breaks, to go to the hospital. So. We're not
all
really
roads
like,
lead to the hospital.
Right. We're not really like on a day-to-day, like what's going to happen, but we're getting close.
Yeah, sure.
And we're seeing the OB once a week now. Mm-hmm. They literally like every once a week we're there and just making sure everything's okay. So.
Exciting times, man.
I feel like I was going to say something about this, but anyway. Yeah.
Okay.
Having babies and Braxton Hicks or whatever, I don't know.
Just don't name your baby Braxton.
No. I actually do know somebody who has a baby named Braxton.
Of course you do. Braxton, Braden. Tractor.
Caden.
Caden.
Kaylee.
Look, just throw.
Kayla, Kaylee.
Look, just throw in a bunch of A's and Y's in there.
Too many syllables. A's and I's and Y's.
Are those consonants or vowels?
Those are vowels.
Vowels.
Did I say syllables? Yeah.
You said syllables.
Syllables and vowels.
Vowels, yeah.
Whole bunch of syllables and vowels.
Yeah. Well, exciting times.
Mm-hmm.
I went out and saw a great comedy show on Friday, which is always good for one's soul to get out and laugh. Laugh at the... Laugh at the ridiculousness of human nature.
Yeah.
And on Saturday... Hopefully we're not getting too much wind noise. Wind's picking up here a little bit. On Saturday, I went and taught a kind of a crash course in kettlebells to a CrossFit staff down south of Nashville. So for those who have been following closely with my content, you might remember a workshop video that I put out several years ago where I had a black eye from jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I have since like used clips from that workshop in a bunch of Instagram posts. So that gym is Whole Strength. The owner, Ryan, is a good buddy of mine. He's a great dude, great staff, great coaches. And I actually went down, that's actually where I went to the Wim Hof workshop earlier this year. So Ryan hosts a lot of cool events over at Whole Strength. But they recently acquired another gym, I believe called CrossFit Imagine, down, what's that big lake that's kind
of... Percy Priest?
Yeah, that's like, is...
Southeast?
East of here? Yeah.
Yeah, Percy Priest.
Yeah. So kind of down, kind of towards the southern part of Percy Priest.
Yeah.
Down there. Beautiful country. Drove down there. Took the long way around because the main highway was blocked with traffic.
Yep.
So in any case, he recently, I guess, brought that gym under his kind of business umbrella. And they were doing a big team building event on Saturday and brought me in to... coach the new staff up on how I approach teaching kettlebells, both the basics and some of the more advanced stuff. So that was really, really fun. Great group down there. But I thought that would be a good jumping off point to throw out some fodder for content here. And kind of one of the overarching questions was... how do you lift heavy weight? How do you coach people to lift heavy weight? And how do you know when to increase weight? So kind of an open-ended question and topic there, but a very obvious one when it comes to training and strength training. It's kind of the elephant in the room. How do we lift more weight? How do we lift heavier? So, throwing that out there, Andy, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm actually going to throw it back at you because...
Oh, boy.
How do you define heavy?
Now, that is a good question. Now we have to define terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great question. It's all relative,
mm-hmm.
For sure. It's all relative. I would consider... I guess I would consider like heavy is found.
Okay.
Heavy really can't be an absolute number. You know? Heavy must be found. Must be found like one step at a time. So yeah, I guess I would consider like heavy being any amount of weight. I mean, something starts to become heavy, I would say, is just it's just spitballing. A definition here. Heavy starts when you feel the weight I guess I should say when you're surprised that the weight isn't moving for the amount of effort that you're putting into it. There's probably a better way to say that. It's when, it's maybe when you're first laying hands on a certain amount of weight, it's heavy when, oh, you're having to push into new levels of effort in order to execute the exercise.
Okay.
Oh, it's starting to get heavy. Oh, I'm having to actually work for this.
Yeah.
And again, that's all very nebulous and kind of airy-fairy there. But that's how you start to find heavy. And then that can be relative depending on the athlete, depending on the day, depending on the exercise, depending on the variation. But if the movement or the exercise just happens in, you know, you're like, I guess the simplest way to say it is when things start getting hard.
I think you can define this both in terms of relative and absolute terms, right? So, like, for example, if I hand you a weight and I tell you to, let's say, press, some sort of press, and I say I want you to press it for more than 10 reps, and you get, let's say, 15. That weight feels heavy for 15 reps. If I hand you a weight and I say give me more than 8 and you get 12, that feels heavy for 12 reps, and so on and so forth. So within, you know, defined within a certain rep range, you could say that it feels heavy or easy or whatever, and then we can add load. If it feels easy, add load. You can also put it in absolute terms. A percentage of one rep max, or, you know, let's say a 3 rep max or a 5 rep max. In other words, like today, I'm working with two sisters. They just started last week. And I've worked with them in the past, but now they're working together, and I saw them today. And last week, we worked up to 95 pounds on the bar for a deadlift, for one set of 5. Today, I had them do a 10-minute sort of open-ended, however many rounds of a couple exercises, including deadlifts. So they ended up pulling 95 pounds, I think, for one got about 19 or 20 total reps, and the other got like 22 or 23 total reps. So, but at the time, 95 for 5 or 6 reps felt heavy. So it's still relative, right? Like 95 pounds for 5 is heavy. So you have to define your terms, like.
Yeah, well, that's where things, yeah, start getting tricky, because we can pontificate and talk about resistance and heaviness and effort, you know, all day long. But it's something that you gotta feel. And yeah, that also begs a question, like the difference between like effort versus heaviness. Like we could make a 20 pound dumbbell feel hard depending on the exercise.
Right.
But 20
right.
pounds is not
heavy.
Objectively heavy or
right.
absolutely heavy.
Right.
And obviously that idea scales up and down depending on the exercise, depending on the weight.
Well, I think that's what's important about training enough to know what hard actually feels like. And, you know, I think you and I have talked about this on a podcast episode or two. Most people don't know what it feels like to really push hard.
Yeah.
At least in the early, let's say the first couple months of training program. it's only until you really start pushing your boundaries, pushing your limits, that you ever know what really hard work feels like.
Yep.
So it's difficult to say. I would say like the first, I don't know, 2 to 6 months maybe. Hopefully beyond 6 months, you know what heavy feels like. But let's say the first 2 to 3 months, you have no idea what hard feels like, what heavy feels like, what you're capable of doing. So us as coaches, it's, you know, we're constantly moving the goalpost. Like today, these ladies ripped 95 pounds for somewhere around 20-ish reps total. Next week, I'm going to make them rip 105.
Yep. I think it's also on us as coaches, in a certain kind of way. The way that I think about it is, to a large degree, technique work is about making light weights feel heavy so that heavy weights feel lighter. Hang on 1 second. What is that? What is that? What happened?
No, our timer stopped.
Hello. Hello. Hey, I think we're back online.
Are we back?
We're back.
Okay.
Okay.
You might have to...
So for the first time, right? First time in 89 episodes, we had a mic cut off in the middle of the recording?
Yeah.
I think that's the first time?
I think so.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
I don't know why that happened.
Hmm.
Blame it on this shiesty Apple product.
Yeah, right? Some bullshit over here. All right, so what were we talking about? Heavyweight. Feeling heavy, making lightweights feel heavy, heavyweights feel light.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's probably a guiding principle of the way that I approach coaching and technique coaching. You know? Putting effort, energy, focus, more effort, energy, and focus into weight than what you would technically need to. And then you kind of have a paradox. It's like, I'm kind of working harder, but the weight feels lighter. Right?
Right.
And so that's the skill of strength. That's what building strength skill, I think, fundamentally is all about. So then when you apply that to heavier weight, you already have the strength there to apply and express it.
Right. Well, you know, lifting heavy weights, and by heavy, I'm gonna define heavy as 5 or fewer reps. Maybe we'll say 6 or fewer reps. That's heavy.
So as a rep max.
As a rep max, like if I give you a bar or a dumbbell and you can do 6 or fewer reps, I'm going to call that heavy.
Okay.
That is a skill in of itself, right?
Yeah.
Learning how to leverage. Because here's like going back to these girls I was talking about today. When I give them 65 pounds in their hands on a deadlift, you can sort of biff. You've probably seen this too as a coach. I say biff it. You can almost kind of fake it. Like some people just have like a starting strength level where 65 pounds in their hands, they can fake a deadlift. Like they still stand up with it. They still put it on the ground. But like the bar can drift. They can sort of do this sort of like half upright row kind of.
Yeah, high pull kind of thing.
High pull. Right. So the weight is obviously not all that heavy to them in that position or in that exercise. And so, you know, progressively adding load and trying to replicate that movement is a skill set. And so it's one of those things that, like anything else, if you want to get good at picking up heavy weights, you should probably practice picking up heavy weights, right?
Yeah.
I think the first stop, though, is to know what heavy feels like. So you got to know what it feels like. And then, two, knowing your limitations. Knowing what you can do and knowing when you can't do it, right?
Yeah.
Knowing what failure actually feels like. And I think that takes a while, especially with like newer trainees. it takes a while to understand, you know, weight and effort and intensity and all those things. And so you kind of have to just like coax it along. Mm-hmm. And so what I'll do with a lot of my clients is, depending on how it looks and feels, I'll add 5 pounds to their deadlift or their press or whatever. And just be like, let me know how it goes. Get as many as you can. Let me know how it goes. I won't tell them what's on there. And then I'm just like, you know what? Tell me. How'd it feel?
Yeah.
So.
Well, and then that kind of dovetails into the second part of that question is, how do you know when to go up? You know, it's like, what is heavy? Where is that line? How heavy should you go? How, you know? And, you know, going back to like what I was saying is that if we start treating light weights as if they are heavy, then we never have to deviate from that fundamental idea, and we can just continually kind of creep up.
Right.
Ideally. So knowing when to go up, that's the sweet science of training and coaching. It's knowing when to go up, when to marinate on the weights you're already at, how to fluctuate in between. But yeah, I mean, it's funny, specifically in like the kettlebell realm, this whole conversation gets a little fuzzy, because let's say traditionally, kettlebells have these big jumps in weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going from 12 kilogram to 16 kilogram.
9 pounds.
It's like 9 pounds. It's like, well, when do you know when you're ready to like make that jump on a given exercise? Well, that's a great question. And it obviously like depends on the exercise, you know? So I think that's one of the pros and the cons with something like kettlebell training, is because you might just have to stick with a weight for a particular exercise for months or years.
Mm.
Like before you worry about going up, or like exploring different variations, right? So it's like, when we talk about swings, yeah, I mean, you can go like super duper heavy on swings, but I mean, you can manipulate doing one hand versus two hands, you can work on different volume schemes, rest periods, all that other stuff. So there's more to the training process than just going heavier.
Right.
That's also an important part of the conversation. And as we were kind of alluding to earlier, a weight that is easy for 5 reps suddenly becomes very, very hard at 15.
Right.
So these are all ingredients that we can play with. And there's really no right or wrong way to go about it. It just kind of depends on, really, people's goals and the context.
Right.
So a lot of these kind of fundamental questions are, you know, now that we're kind of hashing it out, are kind of, they seem very, very simple, but they're hard to answer. When somebody's like, how do you lift heavy weights? Well, let's define heavy.
One rep at a time.
One rep at a time. Took the words right out of my mouth, Andy. One rep at a time.
One rep at a time. He's gripping rip.
But, I mean, ideally, you apply the same technique to quote unquote lighter weight than you do to heavier weight. So that way the only governor is your like level of perceived exertion. And then that goes back into the whole RPE like debate.
Right.
You know, so it's like if our technique is super dialed in and we really know how to engage our muscles, work the pattern of whatever the exercise is, we could just keep creeping that weight up.
Right.
Up, 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 until there's a breakdown in technique, or until there's a breakdown in someone's ability to keep up a level of effort or work capacity.
Right. Well, and I think that's why having like a coach to like eyeball you at least occasionally, it's probably a good idea. at the same time, I've seen some of my clients rip some weight, and if I had chimed in and been like, oh, that's good enough, I think I would have stopped them short by 2, 3, 4, 5 reps.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that what they were doing was unsafe beyond the point, but I'm in awe occasionally of what my clients are capable of doing, especially in my little small groups when everybody's like cheering them on. There'll be guys and girls in there that can rip some weight, and when I think they're about to quit, they rip 3, 4, 5 more. So I'm amazed at what people can do, even though the weight is hard and the environment is stressful and the entire situation is stressful, right? Like, there's nothing that feels great about a bunch of deadlifts. It's hard, it hurts. But I am amazed at what people can do, what the human body is capable of and pushing through. But as far as like, you know, programming, coaching, so on and so forth, I think, you know, I don't think there's a right and wrong way of like teaching heavy weight. There's a few different approaches, and I think they're all good. Whether, like, let's say you want to lift heavy weight. That's a very broad, that's kind of the conversation. I want to lift heavy weight. Help me. That's a pretty broad, but you and I both know, all right, well, two things. You know, how do we define heavy? Or how are we going to define heavy for this individual client? Now, if you're a power lifter or if you're aspiring to perform on a powerlifting platform, we know what heavy is, how it's defined. We know that, right? Well, one rep max, something you can do one time. Those are the powerlifting standards for heavy weight. For the average Gen Pop client, I think you and I could probably make a case for like a 3 to 5 rep max is probably good enough.
Sure.
You know, it's heavy. A weight you can pull 5 times is a heavy weight. Is it a true rep max? Not necessarily. But is it a safe approach to building strength for the, you know, our general population clients who don't necessarily care what their top end strength looks like? Probably. So you need to define those terms. So when someone says, I want to lift heavy weight, it's like, okay, well, let's define what that means to you.
Yeah.
And then once we have that definition, then we can start kind of, you know, pulling some ideas down. Okay, well, do I want to, you know, heavy to me means, let's say, 5 rep max. Do I want to just work on 5s forever, never, 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 and just add weight week to week? That's a way.
Mm-hmm.
If 95 pounds for 5 feels great, then let's say 105 next week for 3 to 5 feels good, maybe a little bit challenging. Maybe week 2 at 105 looks and feels great. Week 3 we're at 115, so on and so forth. Or maybe we approach it from like sort of a linear progression. We say, all right, well, we're going to work on reps, you know, of 10 in week 1. And then in week 2, we're going to add some weight. We're going to do like reps of 8. In week 3, we're going to add some weight and do reps of 6. You and I both know there's no right way of doing it.
Kind of.
It depends on how they want to define it. I don't think there's a wrong way, though, about going about it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You know, part of me would think that if you're like, I just want to get really strong and lift heavy weight, I'm just going to have you rip 5s or fewer. If that was your, if Zach, you came to my gym and you're like, I just want to rip heavy weight, I think your main lifts would be 5 or fewer. And I would progress that in some meaningful way, like, you know, 5 one week, 4 one week, 3 one week, or whatever. Some sort of progression model, because you want to lift heavy weight, so that's what I would do. I don't think it's necessarily wrong with our general population clients who might be a little bit timid about lifting heavy, I'm going to say air quotes, heavy weights.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a wrong approach with doing something like 10 and 8 and 6, because what you're doing is you're sort of carefully guiding them towards heavy weight without them getting anxious about,
right,
if I get hurt or whatever.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And that goes back to what I was maybe trying to communicate with like technique work. If someone's used to like really putting in good focus, good energy, great technique, good bracing with, let's say, absolutely lighter weight, then that's gonna translate with heavier weights over the course of time.
Right.
You know, obviously accounting for volume. Speaking of joining your gym and lifting five or fewer, I actually did.
You did exactly that?
I actually did that. I joined your gym on Friday.
You did?
It just so happens that you weren't even there.
I know. I was camping.
Yeah. But that didn't prevent me from loading up the trap bar and doing sets of five.
Which trap bar?
The one that was on the rack.
Okay. Not the force trap bar.
What's that?
Not the walkthrough.
No.
Okay. I might be selling that thing.
Actually, I was going to say, I vacuumed off some cobwebs from that one.
I saw that the vacuum was moved. I kind of figured you had used it.
I had long rest breaks.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
There's cobwebs in the force trap bar because I don't use it. I just need to sell it.
Yeah, but no, it's funny. I didn't have enough room on the bar for clips, so I had to set the weights down very easy to make sure the plates didn't fall off.
Buddy, you put a super band around it.
I've never done that.
You've never done that?
No, I wouldn't know the first thing about that technique.
You just wrap a super band around to hold those plates on, which tells me that you had 275 on the bar.
That's exactly what I had on the bar.
I know my trap bar. Next time, put a super band, just wrap it around the whole thing.
I thought about it, but then I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want to snap one of your bands.
What?
I don't know.
All right, next time I'll show you.
Yes,
show you.
You need to teach me.
Okay. Yeah.
You must teach me.
Yeah.
So
that's what I'm here for.
The third part of this conversation is, okay, you're lifting heavy. When do you back off? And or what are the relative pros and cons with lifting heavier versus lifting more moderately? Why can't we lift heavier and heavier indefinitely? Isn't that what Milo teaches us? Wasn't the whole myth of Milo that we could lift a baby cow?
The whole myth of Milo is progressive overload.
And that we could keep progressively overloading until we're lifting full-grown bulls out in the fields?
I think it's important to distinguish between powerlifting and general population lifting at this point. I think if you are trying to compete on the powerlifting stage, that I think that like accumulation phases, like volume phases, are definitely part of the program. But I think probably in a very, very low dose capacity, doing heavier, like let's say five or fewer reps, is probably good for your sport. Now, I've never competed. You have. So this is, I'm gonna say this from the outside looking in. I would say that on occasion, doing heavy, you know, fives, fours, threes, twos, and ones is probably good for the sport to know what it feels like to have that kind of weight on the bar. Now, I wouldn't live there. I think, again, it goes back to the low dose. It's probably a better idea to maybe have, let's say, one really heavy technique day. So you have a deadlift day, and you go heavy, and then you do a couple accessories, and a heavy bench day and a couple accessories. I would think that that would probably be a good approach. But on the other hand, I think that a progressive overload that starts with more volume, 3x12, 3x10, 3x8, and working your way down is probably a good idea in the off season. But again, we're talking about power lifters or even Olympic lifters for the same reason. Olympic lifting is about what you can do for probably three or fewer reps, because after three, you're really not like expressing power. So it depends on the sport, depends on what you're doing. But I think for most people, most of the time, really, really heavy deadlifts or really, really heavy bench presses just beats people up. Like the average Joe that sits at a desk or is a stay-at-home mom, like, it wears and tears on them in a way that I'm not so sure is worth, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. So I would say the short version of all this is I would live in the 6 to 12 or 6 to 15 range 90% of the time. And on occasion, I think it's a great idea to vacation. I've even put this in an Instagram post years ago. Live in the 6 to 15 range and vacation in the 5 to 1 range. How often do you go on vacations?
Bro, I'm married to the grind.
Okay, so never? Maybe once a year?
We'll say once a year.
All right, so it sort of exemplifies the point I'm trying to make is...
Andy, I think you are the Shakespeare of strength. You should be putting these tweetable quotes out on the internet.
I did, years ago.
Every day.
I think that,
you
I think
did years ago.
I've already done. Years ago, I said...
You're done.
I think most people, yeah. I sent it out one time, and I can't do it again. No, I think
that's
most people should live in the 6 to 15 range and vacation in the 5 to fewer.
Of course, of now, course. Said, I like that.
You know, I have clients that love heavy deadlifts and heavy squats, so we will dabble in the heavier stuff more frequently than that. But for most people, most of the time, I abide by that rule.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. Well, eventually we hit a bottleneck.
Right.
You know what's funny? I was just thinking about the movie with Bruce Willis. Unshakable,
unbreakable.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that scene where he's bench pressing in his garage?
I never saw that movie, so no.
From what I remember, it was a pretty cool movie. Okay, so there's a scene where he's lifting weights in his garage, I think with his son, and he's bench pressing, and he puts a couple plates on, and he's benching, and he puts a couple more plates on. And he's benching, and he puts a couple more plates on. And so you know the whole, I guess, premise here is that Bruce Willis is basically invincible. Like he's super duper strong, and
right.
Like he doesn't even know it. So he ends up, like, I don't know, bench pressing like 600 pounds in his garage. Like, and then he like runs out of weights. You know.
Yeah.
So. Unfortunately, we don't live in an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Dang it.
At least not until we're plugged into the metaverse.
Yeah.
So eventually, we hit a bottleneck. We're not like Bruce Willis in Unbreakable. Some of us are more like Mr. Glass. But I guess you don't get that reference either.
No.
Because you didn't see the movie. Okay, well, highly recommend that movie. And I'm kind of a movie stickler, so to say that a movie is good coming from me is maybe saying something. I should maybe eat my words because it's been many years since I've seen it. But the point is that eventually we start to hit a bottleneck. Like either our connective tissues can't handle a certain amount of weight or a certain amount of volume, or our central nervous system. Those are usually the first two things that will give out. I mean, obviously, then you have like, you know, freak accidents from there. But the point is that all else being equal, our recovery takes such a toll to where, as you would say, quoting me, the juice isn't worth the squeeze.
Right.
see what I did there?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, speaking to your point, we have to know the relative pros and cons of different, like, levels of effort. With different amounts of relative and absolute weights.
Right.
So what is the benefit of a one rep max versus what is the benefit of a 10 rep max? They each come with their own sets of baggage.
Right. And they each, like, they tell you something different, right?
Mm. Yeah.
I'll tell my clients often when I'm in the gym working with them that for every decision that we make, we are giving something else up, right? So if most people like to pump weights and get, you know, like move fast and sweat and whatever, when you have them go really heavy, you can't do that. Like you need to recover. If you're pulling heavy fives or fours or threes, you can't just go bounce around the gym, do whatever you want, because when you come back, and you try to pull another heavy three, it's probably not going to be a true three.
Yeah.
You're going to have fatigue that's going to be messing with you. And that's fine. It just depends on what your goals are and what we're trying to do. And so I'll explain that to my clients. I'm like, look, anytime we go heavier and heavier, like progressively heavier, like tomorrow, one of my clients, Leah, who listens to the podcast, oh, I have a story about this, by the way. We'll come back to this here in a second. So Leah listens to the podcast. Tomorrow, she's going to pull some heavy doubles.
All right.
And what's been nice about the program that I've written for her in this phase is that early on, we were at like eights, which she could recover from and like pull like pretty easily. Like she was moving. She was moving and grooving. And we ended up having like 10 minutes left in the session that I did not make her do anything. But I knew that the progression that we were going to be working towards with her deadlift was that it was going to get heavier, and so we were going to eat more time. So the workout, in terms of overall stuff we were going to be doing, early in the phase was 45 minutes, 50 minutes. Later is going to push the full 60 minutes because as we get heavier, she's going to have to recover longer, so it's going to eat more time. Now, there's not anything necessarily wrong with that, but I will tell my clients, I'm like, for all the stuff, all the decisions we make, if you want to go heavy, it's going to take a little longer, and I want you to be recovered before you go back into it. So just know that it's going to eat up time that might take away from other things that you like to do. And that's fine. Like, that's great. That's a fine thing. But just know that there are sacrifices to be made. So if you want to go super heavy, awesome. Love it. I want you to chill between heavy doubles. I'm not going to be like, also do this, 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 and this. This isn't a circuit. Relax for like 3 minutes and be okay with that. And if you're not okay with that, then we need to readdress our goals and like what we're trying to do here. So anyway.
Yeah.
So Leah, who listens to the show, remember last week we were talking about the, like last week was episode 88.
Yep.
You and I were both born in 88.
That's right.
And it's the year of the dragon.
That's right.
And you asked me what 2022 was when my baby was going to be born. What 2022 was, would you like to guess?
Would I like to guess?
Yeah.
The year of the rooster.
No.
I give up.
Okay. It's the year of the tiger.
Whoa.
And what's incredible about that is that a year ago when my niece was born, Megan and I both bought tiger onesies for Halloween.
I remember that.
And I have been joking this whole time because our baby is due around Halloween that in the hospital I was going to be wearing a tiger onesie.
Oh.
And so it just feels like it comes full circle that it's year of the tiger, and I've been joking about wearing a tiger onesie on Halloween when our baby is born.
You knew it, man.
I guess. It was written in the stars, man.
Quite literally.
Yeah. So anyway, that was cool. And also the fact that Leah listens to the show.
Love that.
So shout out to Leah.
Shouts out to Leah. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well...
You got more on this one. Don't be cutting this one short. You got more on this one.
I do have a lot more. I need a better container with which to communicate it. But
like a YouTube video?
Like I could probably map this whole idea into some sort of visual, maybe like a pyramid or a circle. Or a yin-yang symbol.
Yeah.
Something like that. That's just how my brain works. But the cycle of heavier to more moderate to heavier to more moderate is essentially what all methodologies subscribe to at the end of the day.
Right.
Because... Going super hard into the super heavy work has value, but again, like how you said, like you vacation there, like you can't live there. Right. You can't live there. Like, listen, you can't live on vacation without being rich, right?
Mm.
You can't live in heavy unless you have some extra help. Quote unquote.
Oh, okay.
Right? You have some extra resources.
Okay.
Now, that could mean that you're like an 18-year-old kid who doesn't have any responsibilities.
Sure.
That could also mean that you're on steroids. But like, nobody's living in the one rep max, super duper heavy realm without some sort of extra assistance.
Right.
Or just a phase of your life, your body, that is temporary.
Right.
Right. 18 to 22 or something like that.
I was going to say, you know, maybe if you're in your teens and early 20s, you can get away with it, but in your 30s, 40s, 50s, uh-uh.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
So then we slide into efforts and methods that are more sustainable.
Right.
More that 60 to 80% effort. And that's great. And you can live there for your whole life, your whole training career, so to speak.
Right.
And you can get very, very strong. Is that optimal? Will you achieve your absolute genetic potential? Probably not. And then also, if you're a power lifter, you need to gun for that one rep max. You need to gun for the 100% effort every now and then. The other kind of tricky thing that we've talked a little bit about, I think, before, is a lot of times, if you're always living in that 60 to 80% effort, if you're not careful, you can also sandbag yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't like really know what you're capable of, you're kind of maybe always living in this gray zone where it's like, you're kind of working.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to have the perspective for what it means for you to know like what's easy and what's actually hard.
Right.
And the only time you know what's actually hard or what's actually heavy is by testing it.
Right.
And then that's what actually gives you your 80% numbers.
Right.
That's what allows you to really work that math.
The way I'll do this, practically speaking, is let's say, you know, I want you to lift something for 8. And set 1, you get 8. And set 2, you get 8. And set 3, I'm like, you know what? I want to see if you got more than 8.
Yeah.
And just keep pushing. Keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. Now, if you get 10... those working sets were probably really good, right? Like, those 8s are close enough to muscular failure that we're going to get some good work out of that. But if you get 8, 8, and 15, then maybe those first couple 8s weren't nearly as hard as you thought they were. If you can rip 15 reps on a weight on the third set that you're doing it, then those first couple sets are probably a little light. And so now it's time to bump it up a little bit.
Right. Yeah, and then that's the value of AMRAP sets.
Yeah. Yeah, to know for sure what you've got. And also to know what it feels like to really dig deep and really, like, really rip. Like, to really get into something that just feels like a slog. Like, most people don't know what it feels like to, like, work.
Jump into the deep end.
Jump into the
deep end. That's what a good coach or a good training partner is for.
Yeah. I think the only thing that we can finish on, because I think about this, talking about, like, you know, getting strong and lifting heavy weight, I think about that Dan John-ism, because you like Dan John.
I do.
Throwers throw, jumpers jump.
Lifters lift.
Lifters lift.
Something like that.
Something like that. So... if at the end of the day you want to know what your top level physical capability is, you probably ought to do that. You probably ought to lift a weight for 1 or 2 reps. A heavy weight for 1 or 2 reps. Specificity, man.
That's
now,
it.
Now, again, vacation there. You don't have to live there, vacation there. But at the end of the day, if you want to know what it's like to lift heavy-ass weights, you should lift heavy-ass weights.
It's a great note to end on.
I thought you'd like that one.
Bro, I love it. I love it. The only other vacation analogy I was going to make is vacations, a lot of times, are very expensive.
Mm,
you know? If you're balling out, how big is your bank account?
That's true.
Man. You're going to run out of money,
man,
soon enough. So,
we're killing on the analogies today.
So I like that. I like that example. You can go on vacation. It's a temporary thing. Live it up. Ham it up. It's good for you every now and then. And then you go back to work, and you work up to the next vacation.
Mm.
And then when you're sitting out on the beach, nobody's going to be kicking sand in your face, big guy. A to Z, no BS. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.